I believe in midfielders.
Hello and welcome to Expected Own Goals. We've got a fun guest edition. Hi, I'm your host, Eric Morgan.
I am Evan Davis. You know, when I think about how we have spent 2024 and how much the podcast has grown and all the things that we've been able to do in women's soccer over the last couple of months, one of life's small pleasures, which is actually a great pleasure, is hanging out in the BMO Stadium press box with this individual who's coming on to gripe and grouse all legitimately about the team that she supports, the Seattle Reign. She's the co-host of Shea Butter FC, one of the best podcasts on women's soccer that you can listen to. And her name, you know her as Silves. I know her as Sylvia Bullock. Silves, welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you.
All of those things were very lovely that you just said, so thank you for that. Yeah, and I'm happy to be here, happy I could finally hop on the pod with you all.
No, literally, there is no more fun than hanging outside the BMO press conference room and just gossiping, you know?
While players walk by us.
Yeah, just being really, really, really catty. you know, it's a way we take our power back.
Because we're talking about Seattle today, and we have one of the foremost experts on watching this Seattle team and watching many better Seattle teams. Yeah. My question to you is, what is the greatest goal in Reign history that you feel like you've experienced?
That Lisa May goal. Oh, what game is that?
2021, right?
Yeah, that Lisa May goal, I think, where Morrow like hits her on the through pass. I was there for that.
You can do a lot worse than a Eugenie Le Sommer goal.
I'm also a huge Marzon fan. Like, she might be my favorite women's midfielder. So yeah, like that whole like half season was very fun for me.
After like around the playoffs of 2014 is when I really started getting into the NWSL. And the World Cup a year later, Marjan just kept turning my head over and over again. I was like, this player rules.
She's so gifted. Like, yeah.
And like still kind of going strong.
I mean, yeah.
Doing all right at Lyon.
Yeah. She doesn't say healthy very much
when
anymore,
she's on the field. Right,
yeah, exactly.
Doing all right.
Exactly.
Oh, man. We discuss whether health is a skill or not occasionally on here.
Availability matters, though. Yeah.
Yeah, it sure does. So, speaking of availabilities, Seattle in this offseason lost some pretty huge components on the back of what I thought was a really impressive championship run. What were your expectations with the Seattle Reign team coming into the season?
I mean, I'll be really honest with you. As we got closer to the start of the season, you know, the preseason and everything else, it very much felt like a rebuilding year. We didn't get younger.
Got older, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're like the oldest team in the league. We're pretty close to it. Right. Like, we aren't a big draft team. Like, Laura Harvey traditionally doesn't really like to draft all that much. I mean, she was there. I'm obviously excited. I thought we had some good pieces there. I'm sure at some point we'll talk about Meza, but I would still like to see her. And yeah, I just, you know, the names coming in didn't necessarily account for the names that went out the door, obviously, with Rapinoe retiring. Like, honestly, my heart broke the minute Megan's Achilles went out at Snapdragon. Like, I have personal beef with Snapdragon Stadium. I maintain a
legitimate
stays healthy. I'm pretty sure we win that game, and so my team breaks my heart a lot, so it's fine. But yeah, I don't think I had high expectations. I think for me, just competitiveness. I didn't want us to, you know, get blown out in games, and for a while that was the case. Like, we kept losing by one for a long stretch there, or winning by one. I think just a plan would be nice, like a plan going into the season. Like, okay, without saying we're going to eat the season, knowing we're going to eat the season, but like, what does the future look like? I think fans are completely willing to, particularly that fan base, that very loyal fan base, would be willing to eat a season if they know this is what the next X amount of years is going to look like. And I think that's where I kind of was. I think that's how the people who cover the team kind of approached it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we were talking about it off air. It's not 100% Leslie Gallimore or Laura Harvey's fault, right? Like, if this sale to the Carlyle Group closes 6 months ago, rather than still continuing to not close, all of a sudden your budgetary certainties are a little bit firmer. And maybe you can entice free agents over knowing that there will be an open checkbook, but you couldn't do that.
Right. So it's, you know, we kind of just have to make do. I don't want to say make do. We have some incredibly talented players, but yeah, like we're the only team that doesn't have an owner. Like you're at a disadvantage.
It was hard for me to conceive before the season began of a league where Seattle just isn't in the playoffs or just isn't a force to be reckoned with. They've just been so consistently excellent, certainly over this Harvey era. And so this really felt like a shot across the bow as this season has sort of unfolded. We had Susie Rance on here preseason to talk about.
Yeah, Susie, and Susie, who is not going to be held to any account for this because she did not want to, picked Seattle to finish fourth in the league. And I felt like, had I done something wrong, because I thought she had made a really compelling case, I had picked them maybe eighth. I think Evan had them seventh. But I think it would be fair to say that even if you'd been more pessimistic, those are modest expectations for a team that has consistently delivered, and particularly in close games with tactical sophistication. And that seems to just be out the window this year. Do you feel like when you're watching this iteration of the Seattle Reign, they are as bad as their current standing? Or do you feel like where they are in the standings is not necessarily a fair representation of who they are as a team currently?
I think my highest expectations would have been team that sneaks into the playoffs, right? I don't know if that's going to happen at this point. I just, where is the switch going to come from, right? Like you're basically hoping that whoever you currently have on your roster goes into like God mode or something, like somebody can carry, because the theme of this year in the league seems to be, right, there's no really, I don't feel like there's a great defense. Right. Like, I don't feel like there's a world beater of a defense. Maybe Orlando is the closest. Even the good teams concede a decent amount. Like, so you're talking about that with Kansas City, right? Like, yes, they score a ton, but they kind of have to because they concede fairly regularly. Right. Yeah. I would say maybe Orlando and Louisville have the best balance in those regards. Just from what I eyeball test again, I'm not the stat person. But that's sort of what we prided ourselves on, is being able to be a defensively sound team. And that's the part. We're scoring goals. We're not defending. And I'm just like, I don't know if that's just a mental thing. I don't know if that's exhaustion. I don't know if that's age. Personnel and inability to adjust. I'm not sure, right? And you have moments, right? We had that first game against Kansas City where I thought, oh, okay, I can see it's still in there somewhere, right? To be able to hold a team like that scoreless. I think they played well against Orlando. I think, you know, some of the ending of that game was unfortunate, but against good teams, they seem to kind of rise to the occasion. Or if they're upset, you know, like that San Diego, like a San Diego game where I just think they were genuinely pissed off. But it's deeply inconsistent for a team that if with that many veterans, it shouldn't be the case.
Yeah. I mean, your instincts were correct by XG allowed. Yeah. Orlando is number one. If you're just looking at like XG per shot, just like how the individual chances look, Louisville's number one there. So you're right. Those are the ones with consistency at the back in terms of chance quality conceded. And it's interesting actually, because I was just checking last year and the best defense, which was San Diego, was giving up about one XG per game too. And Orlando is just slightly better than that. So the distribution is actually fairly similar. But I think the attacks this year are just so explosive and a little otherworldly, like in ways that maybe the league has never seen before, that it almost makes it feel like there's no more defending.
Yeah. Do you think that will maintain itself though throughout the, like, we still have another half of a season to go to.
In terms of like can Chewinga and Banda keep doing this?
And the potency of those attacks, or even like a Croy or someone like that. Like,
yeah, right, right.
I mean, personally,
like
I think
going on a tear. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, personally, I think that we've seen underperformance from Kundinanji and Oshwala against expectations. So even if we, like, if things were to level out and Banda were to step down from the heavenly plane on which she currently operates, and, like, you know, Temwa Chiwenga, who actually has been playing, like, right on bang par with her XG, I suspect that even if Banda were to cool off and Chewinga were to cool off, you still have other attackers who have entered this league who have yet to sort of perform at that level.
Right.
And like Soph Smith is a metronome of consistent excellence. And like, there's no reason that Mallory Swantonson couldn't step it up a little bit more later. I mean, it just feels like, I think your assessment is correct, that the league's attack is better. And that I think that when I think about what has not gone right in Seattle this year, I feel A for Laura Harvey, who I think is one of tactically the best coaches to ever coach in this league, because she's playing basically whack-a-mole. Like every time a problem springs, it's never the same problem with Seattle. I feel like it's like the defense. It's like, OK, so like if we're just talking about the Kansas City game over the weekend, they have not been caught out on breaks very often this year. And they have not allowed rolling goals this year. And the start of the second half of this was a completely new problem. And the cut to Laura Harvey on the sideline just on her water cooler.
Yeah, she was just exasperated. Like, hell is that? Like, I didn't plan for that. We had him 2-2. Like,
yeah. And had him 2-2 on like high-quality chances that were converted.
Yeah. Yeah, Hoyt's, I was like, part of it is Hoyt's in this back. Like, if she's on, that's great for us, right? Mm-hmm. But
just she hasn't been on or on the field very much.
Right, that too. She was genuinely hurt, you know, for a while there. And I think her biggest hurdle, and I remind myself often, she's still young. She's still, what, 22?
That's about right. That sounds about right.
She's young, right? So I'm like, okay. At some point, I think it'll get more consistent with her. I'm a big BB-8 truther. Like, I just think
she's
an unsung. Yeah. She's just first of all, as a person, just fantastic human. But like,
best tweeter in the game.
Oh, she's so good at it. But she's also just this consistent goal scorer. Her path to get here is completely non-traditional. You know, I'm always, I hope she gets a look one day, but I also know like Seattle's not always the sexy choice. In terms of that, and certainly being on losing teams doesn't always get you that unless you are already a name.
Phoenix Mercury, but that's another podcast.
and of course, like, you know, she's getting the coaching, like, you, that staff is solid. You know, Leslie Gallimore is a stalwart of the game and has a deep love for the area and for that team. And so like we have goal scorers, no G is it, you know, I'm a G, I'm a Chelsea girl. So G is my, it's one of my loves, but, you know, she's not as young as she used to be, but clearly can still provide and produce from time to time. And you know, we're on a budget. So we basically just got the Welsh national team, in there, just made a few phone calls and got us some extra bodies.
Yeah. Again, so, as a Welshman, it's very tough to watch what's going on up there.
Yeah.
Let's use that to then segue into the game over the weekend. Mm-hmm. I think some of the themes that are emerging here are consistency, variation in issue for the squad. I think
comically so. Let's be fair.
It's kind of just like what else can happen. Like that's
trying to figure out an attack that actually has like some tactical cohesion to it. Which seems like that's the thing that kind of really jumps out to me and is also a continuation of the issues that they had last year, too.
Yeah.
Which like they got to the championship last year because you couldn't score on them.
Exactly.
This year, you can score on them a little bit more, but they're not scoring any more goals to make up for that. And so sometimes you get games like what we saw against Kansas City. And listen, Kansas City, best pressing team in the league, the best counterattacking team in the league.
Yeah.
What are you supposed to do against Temu Chiwenga? Nobody knows the answer to that, really.
Prayer.
Yeah. Even when you can say, well, you can hold her off, you know, put a couple of bodies on her. When B is on the bench, then you don't have to worry about it, but B is healthy again. So you're just
I totally forgot Lauren played for them. I was like, oh yeah, they did get Lauren.
right. Who ends up scoring a header
have to bench Bernardo, who I think is maybe one of the best mids in the league right now. Like,
without question. Yeah. So what are you supposed to do against that? Like, you maybe give them a grain of salt, but also at the same time, I think it really does reveal the shambolic nature of the way that the roster was constructed and the way that I think that Harvey kind of doesn't seem to have a lot of answers.
and how to fix it. So let's dig in here. I mean, they had their chances. That first staff was back and forth. But the lineup that rolled out, Lauren Barnes got benched. I was not aware.
She had a family bereavement, essentially.
Was that it?
Oh. Yeah. They revoked the press conference. Yeah. So I can say that.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Missed that. Okay. So, but regardless, Shea Holmes has got to come in.
Yeah.
Cook's just getting back to full fitness.
Yeah.
So, you know, that partnership has to gel quickly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like almost immediately, the 17th, 18th minutes, there, you know, it's the shots blocked, but Cooper is in at the top of the box.
Yeah.
Like the lineup that Harvey rolled out, it's optimized in a way that like is basically because she doesn't have any other options, but like G was on the bench, which I guess is like if you have a worry about getting caught out in counterattack, she doesn't have the speed. But that also meant that they had a little bit of passing deficiency in the middle. So like what'd you see there? I mean, it felt just off kilter from the jump.
Yeah, it feels like a lineup, like you said, of necessity, right? You kind of have to plug and play. It feels like we've been doing that all season, though. Like, it feels like there's always one or two positions where it's like the person there just isn't your first choice option. But even if we had, I guess, her first choice starting 11, like, I think if you're going to give Laura Harvey the task of coach what you have, it's probably going to take her a year. It's going to take her a season, right? Because she's going to have to sit down, play with the pieces. Now, in theory, if the sale goes through, she probably wouldn't have to do that for a second year. But I think she has to see it, sit down with an offseason, process it, and be like, okay, here's how I get the most. I know the knock on her early, I think she's gotten better maybe in her second stint, I think after her work with the U20s. But like the knock on her was development, right? Like she was able to, you know, coach sort of Galacticos because it was early in WSL. But like, she was able to coach a collection of stars. Like that's
2014, 2015. That's legitimate Galacticos.
And even in Utah, right? Like you could see what she was trying to do. She had the talent. Yeah. We just didn't have six playoffs. If there were six playoff teams instead of four that year, Utah might win it. Like she had figured something out. And she had maybe the best finisher we've ever produced. Like it's a which Seattle does not have. Like we have the opposite of that. Outside of maybe boats, right, in the air. But yeah, I think it's always plugging and playing. And there's no real ideal 11. And I think that might be the first time since like that one terrible season we had early on. Like no one talks about that's the rule in Seattle. But yeah, like I think it's really hard for her to work with what's sort of been laid at her lap versus like something she can construct, put together, go out, get the pieces she wants. You don't necessarily have to be names, but like tactically she knows who she wants to plug and play. And like I said, we have some good pieces, but they're very inexperienced or they're just not quite what we're looking for. And so it just looks like confusion, right? And inconsistency. And you just kind of power through and you're leaning on vets and you're like, hey, you guys know how to win, right? Like, let's see if you can pull a couple out of your behind, you know, to get us off the table kind of thing. And that's not going to work this year, not with sort of these lethal attacks. Like you said, Kansas City, incredible pressing team, incredible counterattacking team. My expectations for this game were we were going to get blown out. And so, again, first half, I was like, well, wait a minute. There's a little fight in there. And then the second half, like the first minute of the second half, it was a very humbling reminder that, yep, that's about where we are. And like you said, just a new way to lose. And I'm just like, hi. That's not a record you want. We've been a part of records that aren't very fun this year. So I think she would need more time. And I don't know if she came into from the offseason knowing this was going to be that, right? Like I assume they probably thought the team would be sold and she'd have a lot more chance, you know, options to pick up players, free agents, and that just didn't happen. And so it's kind of been everything on the fly. And Seattle's been pretty consistent and pretty stable. And so that type of instability doesn't really work for us.
I think that you would look at the Rain record as a casual fan and say, oh, you should fire the coach. But have you at any point humored the idea that maybe this is just too big, or like maybe it's time for Laura Harvey?
No, because like I said, I think there's just so many other factors. I think when everything else is stable, Laura Harvey's a good cut. Like, we made it to the championship last year, probably shouldn't have. And then, you know,
Shield before that.
Yeah, and just those loss, like the loss to Kansas City, the loss to DC, which I was there for, hurts every time. Yeah, I think getting over that hump, she is the coach that just doesn't get over the hump. But we've also seen in sports that eventually those coaches do, right? And how sweet it really is when they're able to do that. And I think there's a belief in Laura Harvey, not just within Seattle, but I think in the larger community. Like, she is this very beloved coach, and she does have this tactical acumen, and she lets players be themselves. She can see sort of a diamond in the rough and be able to sort of pluck them out and give them confidence. So yeah, I think there's probably not many coaches more suited for that particular coaching position. I feel like if it's this next year and everything's kind of settled, maybe there's a few rumblings, but I'm of the mindset right now that she could probably die at that job and no one would be super concerned. But yeah, I think it'll be more up to her if she wants to try something else.
At times, the two goals by Jordan Heitzman in the first half, best chances that Seattle has the whole game. There have been times where they don't get close to having the level of quality of chances that those chances represented, or they don't finish them. Let's talk some positives. What in those goals do you think the team can kind of take away and potentially build on? You know, are there signals to like maybe cohering this attack in ways that it hasn't been able to before, or at least at this point?
I mean, if you can keep Boats and Hoytsema healthy, I think you always have a shot, right? Like, you still have Sophia Huertas right there somewhere. You know, you have enough talent to cross in. You have a G, you have, when she's on it, a Jess Fishlock. You have people who can create enough chances. And I think if you put some combination of Boats, Hoytsema, Z, or Lats go up there, people who know how to go and get like ugly goals, essentially. Because you just need to score. You don't have to score pretty goals, right? You just have to score goals. I think there's something there. Like, I think there is a crossing, you know, option in terms of they're both good in the air. I think aerial threats serve us well, just because we do have height and people that can do that. I'm always a fan of shooting, so shooting more, testing keepers more. But I don't know how many of those shooters we have, right? But yeah, I think that there was some positives. I think it's like, oh, okay, there are plays. There are tactics in terms of the attack that makes sense if we have our best attackers up top, that there is a belief that we can at least score goals. And if we can maybe get our defense together, the results will change. Do you know what I mean? And I think at this point, it's about improving. It's about seeing the things that you can hang your hat on going into the next season. And quite frankly, I kind of wish we would just play the kids that we do have. And getting them that experience so that as we go into that next season, again, hopefully with that stability, the people that stay are able to then incorporate. They're not necessarily afraid of the moment. And maybe that'll come with the tournament this summer too, which we're in a favorable group, right? Because like, we're in a group with Utah. And I can't remember which league NMEC teams we're in there with. So it's not we could get out of that group at that level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think something like that would even be, I think, a morale booster, that in a tournament you could at least get to a knockout stage, right? Like, learning how to win in pressure situations, I think will be helpful for that group, because they're all going to be together for the most part. But yeah, I think, and seeing Hoytsema score, like seeing her put it in the back of the net multiple times, I think that's always been the expectation with her. And again, when she's on, great. It's just been a consistency thing with her. And I think her role with Canada is changing too. And I think that that's pushing her to really, you know, up her game and get more consistent and putting the ball in the back of the net.
I like the two of them as a two, which we didn't really see a lot of last year.
Yeah. And I was so excited when we got her. I wanted like the double nine.
Yeah. And when you either have Heitzema pushed up and Balser pushed back basically in the midfield way it often looked last year, you had Balser out wide, it always looked disjointed. It never felt like they could find each other. And so if you have two players who, if they can work on their cohesion, and because they both can hold, they both can go. So if you can get that balance right and make it unpredictable, then maybe you can start finding some seams, especially if you've got, because I mean, both of those goals come from crosses with some distance on them.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was Latsko for the first goal and Fischlager for the second goal.
Where to get it in and then Latsko. Yeah.
So that is probably what you're going to be looking for as an attacking strategy, because the midfield is not going to do it for you.
And it's different, right? Like, again, Winhoitz and McCain, like, that's sort of what I was calling for. I'm like, you have these two fairly tall nines who are good at hold up play. Yeah. Also pretty decent passers of the ball, like, especially Boats. Like, she can get a nice pass off. And so I think Laura maybe wanted to go somewhere else with it and then didn't end up doing it. But I'm like, no one else is really doing that, right?
Yeah.
There's something there if you can get it to work. And so I'm hoping that as the season goes along, like you said, the cohesion comes together. The issue becomes Hoytum is going to be gone for essentially a month.
Right.
In the Olympics, and so you lose that kind of training time, and so maybe you use the rest of this season to build that, because like I said, I'm looking around the league and even around global football right now, I'm like, nobody's really doing that. If you can get that to come off, it's gonna be a minute before teams figure out how to defend that.
I actually think
there was a real argument to say, for the first 45 minutes, defensive frailty aside and what they conceded to Kansas City, that was the best attacking half we'd seen from Seattle all season. They created 6 chances that were 0.1 XG or above, 3 that were 0.2 XG or above, and 2 of them are just like tap-in goals or just very, very close. I felt like they showed where I had been most anxious about them as a team. They showed real like pace going forward in this first half in a way that I felt like they hadn't. They were forcing fouls to be drawn. That's what the second goal comes from. They were moving the ball up the field faster than I felt like I had seen for a team that I think traditionally is quite slow.
So, and we got much slower, right? Like, considering the pieces that we lost, we got a lot slower. And I think that's part of the issue, right? In the league where now speed matters, like,
transition fuckfest, that's what it is.
Right, like, hey, go route one. So I literally saw Chwanga run a go route for a goal this year.
Yeah.
So like go route all day. Like Tom Brady's like, go. And she went.
Hey, I mean, listen, Andy Reid was in the building. Exactly. I wonder if he's getting any thoughts.
Exactly.
Like Mahomes is going to need another option.
Owner, right. Like he was just like, hey, here's a strategy. So,
right.
And I mean, Kansas City's done that more than once this season. So I'm like, listen, it's effective. You have alien Chwanga up there.
Oh, yeah.
One of two, because the Chwangas in general are just like, what are you going to do, really? So I think that's always a hindrance, right? And I always think Laura Harvey has a deep aversion to that. Like, she might want one or two players with speed, but she's very British in that way.
Yeah, well said. And I can actually put a number to it. I mean, they are just over 1.5 meters per second in terms of how fast they're moving the ball vertically every game. That is the slowest in the entire league. Like, I mean, we think about North Carolina being the slow, patient type, but at the very least, they have some sort of structure built around it.
Right.
Whereas they don't Seattle just doesn't have the midfielders.
Yeah.
And, you know, at Ji So-yeon 10 years ago, this is a different conversation, but it's not Ji So-yeon 10 years ago. So she doesn't have the opportunity to try and cycle things in the attacking third with any kind of speed. So why not just go direct and kick it long? Use Huerta to find seams. Huerta's playing deeper than she was last year.
Yeah.
Like, there's just so much conservatism, which is why I feel like Laura Harvey doesn't coach with fear, even when her teams aren't doing well.
Yeah.
And this year, I have sort of felt like she has been coaching with fear.
Yeah.
Does that track for you?
Uncertainty, maybe? Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I'm going to be a controversial. Oh, no, because I say this. I jokingly call Casey Simeone. But she has,
it's not
she
bad.
Has some,
yeah.
She has some, and I feel that way about San Diego a lot too, right? Like, and like maybe it's a certain age of British coach. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, it's that generation. Yeah. I think scared's too strong a word. I think she's very conservative. because I think that like style of play, she wants to play, she just doesn't have players for it. And so,
and that's it. In her defense, she just doesn't have the players.
Yeah. And so she's just like, well, I'd rather sit in. The problem is this is like the worst year to do that.
I've felt the fear. I felt the, if you're going to call Casey Stoney Simeone, I feel like Laura Harvey's doing a bit of the Roy Hodgson or the Roy, like bad era Roy Hodgson. Or, but again, like I think when she has talent that is level, she's obviously been able to create winning teams with mm-hmm. lockdown defenses and then timely attacks that are well designed. And this season, obviously, I think she's just at a skill disadvantage. But I felt like what I saw in the first half was actually a path forward. Essentially, right from the jump, Seattle attempts to punch Casey in the mouth and almost does. And that was
the Latsko chance.
The Latsko chance. And that's
big on.
Yeah. And it's almost exactly the opposite of every game that I've watched them play this season where they've not tried to like jump the opponent. And I think there was a feeling that like, look, we can either hope to contain Kansas City's offense and that's probably not going to happen, or we can try to get a goal and game state this game forward. Right. And frankly, when they got that first Heitema goal, there was roughly 3.5 minutes where I thought, okay, actually, this is suddenly really interesting. Kansas City is going to be presented with a set of problems. And then when they concede the Chiwenga tap in, I backed off again. But they scored it. I mean, but Heitema gets a second.
Yeah.
And Heitema gets a second on a set piece. And frankly,
Kansas City's
not, I kind of think. Pieces, by the... Yeah. Yeah, it was great. But I sort of felt like, okay, Seattle's actually like not only are they in this game, they are doing things that are actively messing with Kansas City. But I really felt like this is maybe what we need to see against not the best team in the league or second best team in the league.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this game is very much about they are just deeper and more talented, right? Like mm-hmm. at some point, I don't think Laura was necessarily out coached in this game. No. And I think there's probably part of where Harvey deep down is like, he will never out coach me. And she might be right about that.
I don't think it's that deep down.
Yeah. Like she's like, I am definitely a better coach than that man. If I had that team, I would never lose. I would never draw. So yeah, I think I'm always of two minds of that. I understand why coaches play conservative when they have the kind of team that we have, but I'm always a little weary of them not doing that, right? Like if you're going to lose anyway, why not just go? Why not mm-hmm. just try to hit them back? You do have talent. You're in the same league. So I really appreciate it that they tried to do that. But yeah, I mean, that's what it looks like when the counter hits, right? Like you get the why of, oh, this is why they play conservative. But honestly, I agree. I think going for it, just kind of go for it. If you're going to lose anyway, you're not making the playoffs. Like, what can you learn now? I think we're at the point, like, what can we learn?
Right.
Honestly, I think in that first half, a thing that maybe Laura Harvey was trying to do, and it just couldn't come off because you're playing Kansas City, is like, she did seem like she was trying to add some speed in progression. Like you look at where they're passing the ball and carrying the ball in the final third, like a lot of it's coming through Ziara King, who has speed. We all know that she has speed. I know that opinions vary about like how much she should play and if she should play more or not, what her ultimate qualities are. I'm a little bit maybe on the more skeptical end of that spectrum, but she does offer something in trying to break down defenses and trying to get the ball moving upfield in a timely manner. But the trade-off was that they weren't really doing anything to activate Heitema and Balser across more than like a 30-minute window. Like, Sofia Huerta had one pass into the box the whole game. Like, arguably one of the best box crossers in league history is getting one pass into the penalty area. Like, you have to trust what you do well. And like, I applaud the initiative, and I applaud, like, trying to create a different look and using King in that way, dropping her a little bit deeper, trying to have her be more penetrating. But, like, come on. You've got these two target forwards who could very easily find a chemistry finally if they were allowed to play that way. And you have Huerta, like you said earlier, like it just seems like it's don't run away from, don't, you know, dance with the one who brung you.
Yeah, I think you have to marry those two ideas, right? Like, I think you can still spring an attack with that. But yeah, you have one of the best, like you said, crosses of the ball in league history. Still sitting on that assist to pass Jess McDonald. She has been for like a year or something. Ridiculous. Like, if nothing else, I hope she gets that this year. But yeah, and I would like, what I would like, regardless, is for us to get a couple of like true 1v1 players. I can't really remember outside of, I guess, a healthy Rose from time to time. Like, that's not something we've had in a while. And I wonder what that would open up for our squad.
Yeah. At the very least, giving backline something else to think about.
Yeah. I think to your sort of the Vlatko, Laura Harvey of it all in that exchange, I think there was sort of no bigger fuck you than bringing on Dabinia and Vanessa DiBernardo at the half to sort of say, I just have better weapons.
Right. Yeah, which makes your job a lot easier, right?
Yeah.
If you switch coaches.
Yeah.
Probably looks the same, not a little worse.
No, I don't have any. I am long on record on this podcast for being more pro Laura Harvey than Vlatko, although I'm pretty damn impressed with Kansas City this season in a way I hadn't expected to be. That said, I think if you were to try to fix this team, so you want to sign Pace, but like if you suddenly, let's say this team sale goes through and you have a summer transfer window, how are you fixing this team? It's a big market in a wealthy league that, if it has ownership investment, certainly can compete at the very top end of spending.
And has. It has a long history of attracting top talent from Europe.
It doesn't strike me as outrageous, but like, okay, so Seattle, let's play this fun hypothetical, because I feel like we've been talking doom and gloom, and I just don't think that's going to be the case long term. The fun hypothetical is this sale goes through. You have new, excited owners. What kind of player, or if there are specific players, are you signing for this team to try to make meaningful change?
I mean, I believe in midfielders. Like, I think we need more pace in the middle. I need somebody who can pick out a through ball. Like, I need somebody who can find our attackers, whether that's aerially or, you know, on the ground, being able to sort of manipulate, pull people. I'm trying to think of a player profile.
Aitana Bonmati. No, I'm kidding.
I heard she's good.
I would take Alexia, honestly. I like her dog a little more. Let's see. And I say that as somebody who is not a Barca person. I wanted Maria Sanchez.
Mm.
I wanted Sanchez. She at least opens up one side of your pitch and is able to obviously distribute the ball out wide. I want somebody who can do it centrally. I just think that's kind of where football's trending back toward, Loki. I think we're going to get probably one or two tournaments where people are bombing out wide. But yeah, you're back in the era now where like your midfielders matter, like in terms of ball progression. Listen, I don't know what like sort of her next level will be, but like I really like Roy in DC and just like
her ability
to go. But I also think you need people who can match with pace in order for that kind of player to be effective, which she has there, obviously. Honestly, a DiBernardo type, someone like that would be fantastic, right? And who can be that engine? I mean, or somebody who's just like a destroyer in the middle is also fun. Like, if you find one, Salonis, Lena Oberdorf, I would take her. one player I was thinking about. I just don't know if she'll come to the States. Speaking of the Wolfsburg experiment kind of falling apart, I'm a big Svendis fan, and I actually think that would be mutually beneficial because I think playing in the States would force her for some of the parts of her game that she needs work on to improve. But I also think she becomes the kind of player that opens up attack for us.
Mm.
Maybe somebody like that. Not a midfielder, but yeah.
Okay, so second priority. Where are you going with your second priority player? So you believe in midfielders. By the way, I want that on a shirt. I believe in midfielders.
I am. I'm a midfielder at heart. Most of my favorite players are midfielders.
Well, you fall in love with the 2014... Seattle Reign, of course you're going to be a midfielder.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I mean, like, my people are like Zizou. Like, I'm that kind of. Like, like, listen, I think Courtney and I said this on the pod, like, could watch Lily Johansson all day. Like, that kind of thing.
By the way, if we're playing the fantasy game, that's actually the midfielder.
Give me her, right, immediately. It would change our lives. So it's someone like that. Second position, I would like to find a younger partner for Alana. Like, I think Kosha was across the sidelines from her. Didn't really help her confidence at all. But I know there's a world class. Like, I've seen her at higher powers. I think somebody who can cover a lot of space, or she can cover a lot of space, and that person can roam a center back that can pass, which I think is the profile in general right now. I would just like to shore up that back line, maybe get a little bit younger, get a little faster. Yeah. That back line's not fast at all.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like Shea Holmes isn't old, but she does not have the speed or that quick first touch that you're talking about.
Like a ball carrying.
Right.
Center back, essentially, which again, sort of how football is trending. So, I think those would be the two. I actually think one of our bright spots is we do goalkeepers really well.
Yeah, true.
Ivory's having a nice season.
She is. And
stepping into a tough situation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I honestly think Dickie was solid before. And then obviously, I still miss Fallon. But we've been able to pick out goalkeepers pretty consistently for a while here. So I do think that's a strength. We get good shot stoppers. So, I think that any goalkeeper we pick would just need that back line solidified for them.
I wanted to talk a little bit about Shea Butter, because this is a show that I found sort of like at the tail end of the serious phase of the pandemic, and was like, you know, eventually when your episodes also got to like, are we going to hit 2 hours this week? Like, that was perfect pandemic listening. But I want to hear from you about why you and Sky, your podcast partner, felt like this was something that you guys not only wanted to do, but almost felt like you needed to do.
Yeah.
Because you guys are unique. You guys are unique for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, I think we felt it was a need. We looked around and we just didn't see it. We didn't see coverage of Black players and women's soccer. And, Sky had played. I hadn't had the opportunity because my school did not have a team. And then leagues are expensive, right? So it's a need. And I guess my motto in life is like, F it, I'll do it. If somebody else isn't going to do it. And if I'm seeing a need, my suspicion is that other people want this thing. And honestly, the players kind of let that, right? Like, we could very well see, like, they were kind of not so subtly crying out for like, hey, there's this really important perspective missing. And so with no real experience, we just decided, hey, let's see. If we can't get them the opportunity to tell their stories, get a chance to get on a team. Like, I'm at TST, actually, and it's hilarious because our first player as our guest was Mariah Lee, who played for the Amy City 7. I got to interview her again yesterday. And so it was just really, we hadn't met in person yet, obviously, because of the pandemic. But it was just a really full circle moment. She was my first player guest, and it was great. She's fantastic. I think, and players like that, right? Like, people don't necessarily know, even though they went to a Stanford and played with all these players and everything else. It taught us a lot, right? Like, we made a lot of mistakes, but we found early on that it was worth it, right? And people were like, no, this is good, keep going. And so we were able to make a lot of blunders, I think, just because it was such a small following at first. I think that's what still motivates us. And giving those opportunities to other people, right? Like, we've kind of forged our own way, usually pay to cover the sport, and all of these things, and being independent media is, we've had to learn as we go, we've had to build as we go. And so every tournament, every game is a different challenge, a different learning experience. And I think the other thing for us has been like trust building, right? Like, we've worked really hard. And I think in covering, particularly covering Black players and women's soccer, that's such a big component of it, right? Like, having their trust, having the trust of like fans as well. I probably don't have the trust of front office because I slander them too much, but like having the trust of like sort of those populations.
You don't want their trust anyway.
Yeah, like having the trust of those populations. And we've heard it. We've heard it directly from those fans, directly from the players, like why it matters. And thank God somebody thought of it. And I want to shout out to, like, we're really tight with Diaspora too, right? Like, it was basically the two of us in the games for a really long time. And so we lean on each other a lot too. And we're different shows.
Come on, that bum Andre Carlisle has been riding your coattails for years.
I know.
JK, Andre's
one of
a friend.
The best people I know.
I know, he rolls, yeah, for he's sure. The best.
For sure. Yeah, and I wanted to cover it, and like little me, and selfishly, like little me wanted to be like Hannah Storm and Robin Roberts. So sometimes life, not exactly how you plan it out, but life comes full circle. And I think that coupled with like a pandemic, and just if you get this chance, I'm just going to go for it. You don't know what life's going to bring you. So we might as well lean into it. And it's turned into something pretty cool. Like I've gotten to travel, I've gotten to see a lot of amazing football. I've met some lifelong friends and amazing communities. And I feel like where the sport was when we came into it versus where it is now has obviously changed for the better. There's still so much work to do, but I hope we've made some small, you know, difference in that or some push in that as well. But I mean, I love it. I love the sport. It's the best sport. It's the best. Yeah. Sport. So, yeah.
For those who aren't aware, you and Sky were on the ground in Australia and New Zealand for the World Cup.
Sky was doing the coverage from the U.S. And then, yeah, I was on the ground in Australia. So that was pretty unique. We chose to, once we saw the World Cup draw, we chose to follow Group F, which we were only ever going to go to Australia. And then we lucked into, or however you want to look at how the U.S.'s performances went, they happened to play in Australia because they finished second. So we ended up seeing it anyway. But our assumption was everyone was going to cover them. And for our brand and our show and who we cover in terms of covering Black players in the women's game, Group F was pretty much chock full of Black players and Black teams. So we were like, cool, we're going to cover that. And honestly, fantastic choice.
What do you feel like you gained from that experience?
I mean, so much, right? Like I'd clearly never been to a World Cup, and just sort of the flow, the rhythm of what a tournament like that is. And sorry, guys, the pressure. But also just seeing it in person, seeing this groundswell, watching like Australia get on board with the Matildas was that. But just like, and honestly, kind of killed by inferiority complex because I looked around at people covering this huge event and I was like, not as bad as I thought I was. not as good as we want to be, but certainly not as bad as we thought we were. So I think it gave us some clarity. I think between things like that and like covering the World Cup W and some other things, like maybe we can pull this off. So I think it's helping us expand sort of how we want to do this going forward.
I had completely forgotten that you guys had focused on Group F because Eric and I were also, I mean, we were in LA, but we were doing episodes and we were staying up till 5-6 in the morning watching these games. And I realized I have lost so much memory of those 4 weeks. Like I constantly had to go, like, go check back on rosters, like who was playing in what game, like this fucking mess.
I have no memory of those months except for occasionally flashes of individual games. Have you gone back and listened to your World Cup coverage?
Not really, and I should, because honestly, I think Sky's like coverage here with like the watch longs was probably the best like online coverage we did. But yeah, like I was just thinking about that. Like it ebbs and flows. Like there's times I'm like, I can't believe I was there. I was there for the Caicedo goal.
Oh my god, yeah.
What a moment. Like what, just first of all, the Colombia fans might be the best fans in soccer. Like just
yeah, especially for a moment like that against that opponent in that
context.
And
we were sitting like smack dab in the middle of Columbia fans.
Oh my god.
And they like, anytime Linda touched the ball, it's like an orchestra conductor, right? Like I've told people this, like, but it's, they ebbed and flowed with her. And like to watch this entire country get behind this Black queer 18-year-old girl who's a baller and just like embrace
who's
her,
been to hell and back in her life,
right? And there's like guys with signs like, I want to play like a girl. Like it was real and genuinely, right? Yeah. And they support their women like they support their men. Also learned how many Colombians there were in Australia last summer. So cool. Apparently there's like a large diaspora, didn't know that. And then I was also there obviously for the semifinal, and I maintain I've never heard a louder noise than Sam Kerr,
the Kerr goal. Yeah,
just like lost the eardrum, I think. I've recovered since, but just moments like that were incredible.
Yeah, the only thing that kept that from being one of the greatest sporting moments of all time is that they lost the game, you know.
Yeah, that was it.
In some ways, those moments need to be almost bigger than the results themselves, and I think in that way that goal is bigger than the result. I think that there are.
You see it with the way that Australia playing friendlies right now, yeah, and they're packing stadiums. Like, yeah, that wasn't happening a year ago.
Yeah, I think in a weird way, you were talking about this being sort of the best game, and now we're at the waxing philosophical about why we love soccer, which is always a great place. There is just something about like near misses in this game that get applauded, and that can be results, that can be individual attempts, but there's just something about like maximum effort and beauty and it still not being enough that I find like really heartbreaking and satisfying. And I feel like that Sam Kerr goal, maybe the best goal I've ever seen. It's a short list of great, like for just the moment of it.
He doesn't score those goals. That's why that was so wild. She doesn't take the shot.
No, and I wonder if like she's feeling any healthier, if she's like, I should probably take a few more. Like, I think she's just like, I can strive.
I think she also saw Marrier, so I'm going to be really honest with you.
Fair. But I
and
also
that's what smart strikers do, right?
It's like the keeper. Tormentor. Like, she saw Marrier, so yep. She was like, yes.
Yep. It's like the FA Cup final from 2 months ago, baby. You're going to have to suffer again.
But yeah, I think that goal was like bigger than its, you know, like,
yeah,
it's bigger than the result. No one will remember that Australia didn't win that game, I think, in a decade. They will remember that goal.
Because three quarters of the country watched that goal in real time.
Yeah. And like you said, it's continued, right? Like, they didn't stop supporting them. Like, they're still packing out stadiums. Mary Fowler has a Barbie. Like, they care so much about that team. They really embrace them. Like, that's Australia's favorite team right now. And that'll change, you know, the next generation and who comes through. And like, that team is probably going to be a pretty formidable force in the game for the next year.
Because of your focus, who is like your, if you were to put it out, let's put out some really good energy right now. You could sit down and interview your dream interview at this point. Who is that? Who's the person that you just need a yes from and you get to sit down and have as the other voice in the room?
I'll give you two. One, just for the pure like love of the game. Oh my God, I absolutely love this person, Formiga, but I don't speak Portuguese. She was here, but like, you needed an interpreter. I couldn't receive. And then honestly, for like I think that their impact has gone really unsung, and I don't even know if she wants to speak with people. I would like to talk to Zakiya Biwar.
Oh yeah,
like I'd great really pull. Like to. I mean, think there's a lot there.
I mean,
and I want her to know, like, I haven't forgotten about her. If everyone else has, I haven't.
There is so much of that, I guess, for lack of a better term, prehistory, the early years of the league, and with what Bywater's represented, you know, being the rookie of the year. Was she the number one overall pick that year? Yeah. Like,
yep, she's the only number one pick that didn't stay in the league.
Exactly. And we all know why a lot of other people didn't. So yeah, that's, I'd listen to that podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think there's a lot there, and she tried, right? Like, she
very early on
put her name on it, and she tried, and she chose her, I hope, her piece over everything else. Right. But I think there's always people like that, right, who are first, and it just gets overlooked, and then everyone else follows and gets the articles and the glory, and they should. Like, this isn't an oppressional kind of thing, but just, I think she gets forgotten a lot.
Well, I think that in general, especially like when we're in a time now where like the U.S. women's national team rolls out their best starting 11, that's going to be a majority Black team. Yeah. And it was not like that for most of this program's history. And because of the ways that the league itself, as you've mentioned, has completely reshaped since you guys started the show, so much of what happened in 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016 is just, I think we're at a very critical moment that we have to make sure that we preserve that history.
Yeah.
You know, so I hope that you can talk to Bywaters one of these days.
Me too, if you're listening at all. I don't know how much she cares about the sport anymore, but would love to.
Guys, if you're not listening to Shea Butter FC already, listen to Shea Butter FC. They've been doing all these crazy crossover episodes with Diaspora and United, which is another show you should be listening to. I just
wanted to yell about Lilian. It's fine.
and I appreciated it. She deserves to be yelled about. Sky said one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life, which should also go on a t-shirt, where she says, "I don't want anybody bumbling and stumbling trying to play out of the back."
Oh, she's so infuriated by it.
Like, I want that on a t-shirt. It's a fantastic show. Silves, you're the best. I can't wait to see you next week for the next home game. So
yeah,
thank you.
I think the Juneteenth game. And hey, got some hopefully good news today. So it won't be boring, hopefully, soon, if nothing else.
If she could get up to game time speed, we'll see.
They just need like 70%.
I'm pressed to believe she'll play this season. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. It's a dad joke thing. It's a bad pun. No.
In any event, listen to and follow Shea Butter FC wherever you get podcasts. As for us, please follow us wherever you get podcasts. Rate us, review us, rate us 5 stars if you are going to rate us at all.
And
follow
you know
us
what? Rate them 5 stars too.
Yeah, actually, they deserve the 5 stars.
Don't
give
stuff,
them the 5 stars.
Sure.
Yeah. No. Yeah. be in your element. You deserve it. Follow us on social media at XOwnGoals. That's the letter X Own Goals. If you think we've made an own goal, please email us at expectedowngoals@gmail.com. That's the letter expectedowngoals@gmail.com. Do not email us about anything Silves has said.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's fair. Yeah, don't just hop in my mentions. It just shows mentions. That's fine.
Bonus episode on Thursday. We will talk to you guys then. Too long.